Good morning. We are here with Stephanie Springay and Sarah Truman. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Stephanie Springay. I am an associate professor at the University of Toronto in Canada, and I've been living and working in Sydney, Australia for the last 16 months on a large walking research project.
My name's Sarah Truman. I'm a PhD candidate from the University of Toronto in Canada, and I'm currently in Australia working with Stephanie on some of her research projects.
And I am Ilaria Vanni, and I work at UTS in International Studies. So today we are going to talk about walking as a research methodology. And I was wondering if you could start telling us how your work has developed in terms of walking as research methodology, but also as an embodied form of mm-hmm. pedagogy.
So I've been working in walking research for a number of years and have had a number of grants in Canada on this topic. But the one I'm working on right now, you can find other information about our collaborations at our website called walkinglab.org. And the premise of this current grant is that there's a long history of walking as a methodology in the visual arts and performance arts. So a lot of contemporary artists since the 1960s have used walking as a methodology, both as sort of the lone artist walking in the landscape, and more recently we see a lot of artists working with communities so that it's a part of a kind of social or community practice. But over time, in the last decade, maybe two decades, we've seen scholars who are in the social sciences, such as social geography, cultural anthropology, new media, and education, think about walking as a methodology. So they've started to use walking or even walking technologies like GPS and the GoPro camera to augment the way in which they think about maybe doing interviews or tracing bodily movements in space. And so the research that I've been doing has been around networking across these various disciplines, thinking about the different methods of walking, so the different ways that people use walking in their research, as well as different methodologies, so different theories, different frameworks. One of the things that we've sort of tried to extend on is there's been a lot of work on what we would call the phenomenology of the senses. So thinking about the different ways that walking includes both movement and taste and smell and sound. And we've tried to extend the phenomenology to also think about theories of affect and theories of movement that aren't just about moving from point A to point B, so that it's not always just directional.
Thank you. And what happens during a walk?
Well, there's different approaches to what happens during a walk. So the phenomenological approach would look at your embodied understanding of what's happening when you're walking, your lived experiences, the senses that Stephanie just mentioned. Some walkers look at walking as a narrative and the movement from one point to another as a kind of storying of the city. Michel de Certeau talks about walking as a rhetoric of movement. There's other theorists that talk about emplacement, so rethinking the body and how it's moving through space, or how space is created through movement. There's theorists from France and walking practitioners called the situationists who use forms of defamiliarization as a way of unhinging bodily habits. And one thing that Stephanie and I have been talking about and trying to think about is this notion of absolute movement. So the body is kind of being produced through movement. It's not something that's moving from a certain point to another point, which would be a kind of relative movement. So we use walking to to rethink even how we think about thinking and how we think about moving.
And how do you start and how do you decide what kind of walk and walking you will be doing?
Well, in some ways you could look at what you want to get out of the walk. So I'm in a walking group in a place called Hamilton, Ontario. We have a group called the Hamilton Perambulatory Unit. And we often base our walks on how we can defamiliarize our current understanding of the city. So we'll say, what can we do today to move it through the city in a different way and learn something new about it? And so one of the practices we do is using synesthesia. So we walk in the city and we'll take a sense, so perhaps the sense of smell, and we'll smell things, and then we'll take notes using other senses. So instead of saying what it smells like, we'll describe how it tastes using sense of smell. So kind of playing with the senses in different ways. A famous example is the notion of the derive, which was, I guess, coined by the Situationists in France in the 1960s, and they would set out in the morning and walk through the city as a group and look at places in the city that attracted them and places in the city that repulsed them and work as a group to navigate the city. And then they'd generate maps and they would cut out parts of the city that they didn't like from their maps and like recreate the city through their movement and through their mapping. So those are some examples.
So some other examples of different ways of deciding on a walk. Sarah described sort of thinking about senses and thinking about placemaking. And a lot of the work that I've done has to do with issues around, I guess, identity and subjectivity. And so those become the starting places of the walk. So one of the projects that I worked on many years ago, and it now tours internationally, is called Night Walks with Teens. And the premise of this is these are young people, age 14 through 21, who live in a very urban area, a very socioeconomically risky neighborhood where there's lots of new immigrants in Toronto. And none of these teens were, like all of their families have come, and they are non-white students. And often in large urban spaces, when you see large groups of teenagers and you see them at night and they're not of sort of the dominant sort of privileged understanding of bodies in space, the public has this sort of public vilification or public imaginary that they might be up to no good. So we actually do this walk where we go to cities. So we've done it in the east coast of Canada, we've taken it to the UK, to Croatia, to Spain, to Italy, and we conduct a series of walk that take place very late at night, and we invite strangers to come and walk with the teenagers. So it's really, again, around this notion of defamiliarization, but rather than thinking about place or the senses, it's really about sort of identity politics and trying to disrupt people's understandings of different kinds of bodies in places. So that's just another example of how we decide where to start a walk.
And so there are clearly many different ways of walking.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's you could almost come up with, like, we couldn't even come up with a list because it's just so open to how you might want to, where you might want to start it and how you might sort of think of what the walk is about.
And clearly also there are different trajectories that you might decide to follow. And yeah. Trace. Also.
Yeah. And so some of the other projects that are happening with the Walking Lab that are about these different ways of walking, we have we've curated a series of residencies. And what's interesting is when one thinks of an artist or a scholar in residence, we think of a physical place. And so with the Walking Lab not actually having any physical location, these manifest as people doing walks all over the world, and then they do a digital online blog. And so we have a scholar from Melbourne. She's a professor at the Victoria University, Mindy Blaze, and she does a lot of research in what's called early childhood education as well as animal studies. And so she's looking at the notion of the more than human. So she does these walks with her dog just around neighborhoods in Melbourne and then sort of blogs about what might her dog have been doing and thinking. So it's really changing it from like a human sensory walk to this kind of dog-oriented walk. We've also, we haven't done any work specifically on disability, but we've been thinking a lot about the fact that walking kind of implies that one has the access to legs that move through space. And someone noted to us some famous examples by the feminist American scholar Judith Butler, who's done a series of articles and walks with a colleague in a wheelchair. And so again, like walks could really have push what we mean by walking. And then another project that I was involved in that took place for 2 years in Toronto was what we would call a carnival procession. So like a large parade type that had costumes and everything. And it was a 2-year project because the artist worked with various communities to enact this. And then the walk, the procession, became the opening ceremony for the Para Panem Games. So again, it was using spoken word poets. Many of the participants in the procession were in wheelchairs. They were disability dancers and artists working in Toronto, as well as there's an Indigenous parkour group that worked with the artists. So again, all different kinds of thinking about how one moves through space. So there's not really one way that we conceive of walking.
Mm-hmm. And from a very practical point of view, do you use any technology when you walk? Do you use notebooks or sound recorders, cameras?
So again, I think different people and different people interested in walking use different kinds of technology. Sarah does take quite a bit of like ethnographic notes. Yesterday we were on a walk and she was doing sort of stratification and taking notes of stones. We've both used GPS. I use a lot of photography. A colleague of ours in Brisbane, Dr. Linda Knight, she does these beautiful drawings that she calls spatial mappings. So there's all kinds of different ways that people think about annotating and using technology on a walk.
And I did a project last summer in the United Kingdom where I documented my walk through other people's postcards. So I walked for 100 kilometers along a trail and left postcards addressed to myself in the hopes that other people would find them and post them back to me. So it's a strange kind of technology, but that was how I documented my walk.
Wonderful. And do you always walk forward, or sometimes you go back to the same walk?
Well, we were thinking about this, and I guess both Stephanie and I, both of us agree that you can't redo a walk. It's always going to be a new event, but I have walked the same place, the same physical geography more than once, but I feel like that's a tracing. Something's always lost. There's always something new there.
In fact, we were thinking that could be a really interesting sort of exercise for students or people interested in walking is what happens if you actually perform the same walk. You know, you could almost set that as like sort of a parameters that you walk a certain path and you do it every day at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
But it's never really the same. So it'd be interesting to see what changes, what even whether or not it's just the people that you meet and the sounds, but also how your body moves through space is really different every day at 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is also, I find, a matter of stratification, so that if you do it for a period of time, at the end you have, a considerable amount of information, and it is, it gives you an idea of how much space is also constituted through relations, more than anything.
And maybe another way, I kind of liked how you asked whether or not walks always go forward or whether they're repeated, but you could also think about backwards walking. There's an artist that I've worked with in Toronto called Rena Katz, and she does backwards operas through Chinatown, which is now Chinatown, but originally it was the first place that Jewish migrants and our textile industry was in Toronto, and so she has a long personal history. And so her backwards operas are written to kind of expose the history of labor and enslavement, in some ways, to use that term, in that neighborhood. Mm. She has also done other kinds of, like, walks where we've had to, she's come and led my students on walks where we have not been allowed to talk at all to each other or to anyone for a whole hour on a walk, which, you know, is a different way of moving forwards and backwards, mm-hmm. and things like that.
So. I used to live in China, and I used to visit this park every evening, and there seems to be a part of Chinese culture, maybe Chinese medicine, where people walk backwards. A lot of old people spend the evenings circumambulating the park backwards, and I always found that interesting. I should actually look into that, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. so maybe different cultures have a different understanding of what walking forwards and backwards
yes,
is.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's great.
Yes, yes. And do you know when a walk is finished? How do you know, actually, that a walk is finished?
Is anything ever finished? No, we were thinking about that. And so yesterday we were on this walk, and we were walking up a creek, and you could say, well, the walk begins at the beginning of the creek and it ends at the end. But I, in my head, I made an enabling constraint. I said, at 12:15, I'm going to stop taking notes. That's where I've decided my documentation's going to end. When, I don't know when a walk ever ends. But we use enabling constraints mm-hmm. a lot in our research, in walking and in other forms. So it's a parameter that you set. So it constrains you in some ways, but enables you in other ways.
Yeah, so sometimes it's the time, like the duration that you might want to walk with people. Sometimes it's place markers, you know, you're walking from here to another place and you're going to do it along particular paths. Sometimes we just did a really beautiful bush walk about a month ago up the Miquelon Creek. And the whole point of that weekend was around what we call slow scholarship and Isabel Stenger's slow politics. And so what was really interesting was that the walk, in a way, happened over various, like, small periods of time over a 3-day weekend, but I would see them as all continuous as one walk. So you also have to conceptualize maybe what you mean as beginning and what you mean as ending. And those can be decided even after the fact, when you're mm-hmm. starting to put it together as a project or put it together theoretically when you're writing about it.
And do you document your walks? And is documentation important?
So that's interesting. We've been talking a lot about this in the walking lab, and there's a really strong history of documentation, and that we see both in the social sciences and in the arts, and it often uses photography. And so then the photograph kind of stands in for this movement and ephemeral practice. And so we have actually been trying to problematize that, because a photo, there's all kinds of, you know, challenges around a still photograph ever really representing something that is in movement. So we both use all kinds of forms of documentation, using technology, using text, because Sarah's a literary scholar. But we've been trying to kind of open it up and think differently about this. So, for instance, I have a background in textile arts, like contemporary felting practices. So I've been collecting rocks on a walk and using wool, sheep's wool, and felting rocks as I walk. And it's really the process of being able to touch and to tactily sort of feel my way. It's, again, this embodied pedagogy. We've also talked about how can we use photographs as a sort of a counter archive, also to think about how do we archive feelings, how do you take notes of senses and feelings that can't be captured digitally, and we've also just been trying to think about what happens if we do no capture, right? So if we take nothing from a walk, then, and it doesn't have a documentation, then what is the documentation? And we haven't really arrived at necessarily answers, but we are just trying to play with different forms and concepts.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca Schneider, she's a theorist of performance studies, talks about how embodied movements, they remain differently. It's not like they don't remain, but they remain differently. And talks about the notion of the archive as something that isn't fixed, but is in movement as well. And so we've been reading a bit of her work as well, trying to understand this.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much for your time and for your insights on walking today.
Well, thanks for
having us. Yeah. Have a great walk, everyone.
I'm sure they will.